First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a quality Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis. At sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists. At glgcorp.com, the First Serve, your home of tennis.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome along. Monday night edition of the First Serve. We'll just come up the betting order a little due to the NBL Cup later on tonight. It's great to be here after, well, a summer of tennis that has felt like probably 2 months condensed into 3 weeks. If we think of the leading events into the Australian Open, I think as soon as the players actually all landed in Australia in the middle of January, that's how long I feel like the summer of tennis is gone. We take a bit of a breath today. I just drove past Melbourne Park on the way here and it's still all set up, so it'll take a little bit of time to dismantle. But would love your calls tonight, and post the Australian Open we get back into our regular Monday night show. Normally we'll be at 8 o'clock, but we shift up with the NBL Cup, a bit of hoops a little bit later on after 7 o'clock. Would love your reflections on the Australian Open. Plenty on our social media today at the First Serve. Well, not on Facebook. That's a bit disappointing, but still on Twitter, still on Instagram, and you can check us out at thefirstserve.com.au, and I'll answer a few of those social inquiries throughout the hour today. Always got some great prizes. Favourite online tennis store, fast delivery, great prices, free delivery on orders over $150. So just go to their website, tennisdirect.com.au. You can get that 10% discount if you mention the promo code FIRSTSERVE10. And they are giving away, in conjunction with Yonex, three prize packs to the value of over $500. So a Yonex V-Core 2021 100 tennis racket, cap, socks, tub of the Super Grap over grips. We've also got, thanks to our good friends at Sunbless Sunscreen, the First Serve Tennis Sunscreen. We've got that to give away tonight as well. It's designed specifically for tennis. You can order yours at sunblesssunscreens.com.au. Just use that discount code SCN. Also, I'll throw in the mix tonight, thanks to Australia's hype sneaker label, Athletican, available exclusively online at athletikan.com. Just use that discount code FIRSTSERVE15. Got a pair of sneakers to the value of $129 to give away. And also, Naomi Osaka on the weekend lifted the Daphne Akhurst Memorial Cup. So the book, of course, regarding the history of Daphne Akhurst. If you've ever wondered what she did, who she was, the woman behind the trophy, you've also got a number of copies of that to give away tonight. So get involved, 1300 736 736. We can talk Australian Open, but if you want to talk broader, all things tennis, anything you want to put on the agenda tonight, very happy to have you on board. We'll have a chat to Scott Spitz, leading tennis writer for The Age, who was down at Melbourne Park with me for 2 weeks. Gee, the tennis has moved very quickly. The ladies are in Adelaide right now. We may get across there this hour where Ash Barty is the top seed. Frank in One Turner. Frank, it's great to have you on the First Serve.
Yes, look, I'd like to bring attention to someone that's probably more relieved than Craig Tilley about the finish of the tennis. It's my wife. She's the safety officer for the whole complex. And you would not believe what she had to go through with all the dramas, you know, with players coming down with virus, the virus before they came to Australia. And she had to rewrite all the safety programs for the thing nearly every second or third day for that first couple of weeks. And to get through it without any major dramas with regards to players contracting virus and you know, spectators, she is one relief woman, I tell you.
Oh, no doubt. It's been a phenomenal effort, Frank, and, you know, having sort of walked all the corridors and all the zones when I arrived there for the ATP Cup leading into the Australian Open, it was superbly set up and run. I mean, hats off to Tennis Australia and their team. We'll have a chat to, we'll hear from Craig Tiley very shortly, who spoke in the aftermath earlier today when Novak was having photos with the trophy down there at Brighton Beach, the Sir Norman Brooks Challenge Cup. Phenomenal effort. Yeah, hats off to them. I mean, you know, there were hurdles and there were different challenges certainly thrown their way, and they went from one contingency to the other. And, look, thank goodness we had some fans in at the end. Would have been quite strange for the semi-finals and the finals to have no fans. And I think it's shown the world that we can run a major sporting event in a really COVID-safe manner. So this is not going to be the case, though, for the tennis players departing Australia, because they're going, obviously, to, you know, hotbeds in Europe and the US and other parts of the world where, you know, probably the majority of tournaments are going to continue to be played behind closed doors or with very little crowds. So all that certainly to unfold. 0433 98 11 16, if you want to send us a text through your thoughts on the Australian Open for 2021 and any other broader tennis issues. Simon's in Point Longsdale. Half your luck, Simon. Wouldn't mind getting down there. Welcome.
Hey, young man, mate.
Going well, thanks.
Good, good. Oh, I'd just like to put a bit of a positive spin on everything. This Australian Open's been great for junior players. I've got three young boys under 12, and they're just heading into finals now with tennis, and they've been glued to the TV, and, yeah, it's such a challenging time to have the Australian Open get off the ground and do so well. It's just really good to see.
Good on you, mate. Sound like you're in the cement mixer. Thank you for your call. Look, unfortunately, we didn't have the junior tournament. I think that is, well, from what I understand, going to be certainly held later in the year at some stage, the Australian Open juniors. But, yeah, I suppose the implications, and Craig Tiley has spoken today, and he's spoken for the last few weeks, the financial implications for Tennis Australia to hold this Australian Open. So once they do all the balances and checks over the next month, it'll show the bottom line. It's going to be a hard road. I mean, they've gone through pretty much all their cash reserves. But what that means for everyone down the line into the states, which Tennis Australia heavily fund, and then into that junior development grassroots space, how much of that will be affected due to the Tennis Australia spend on running this year's Australian Open, will be really, really interesting to just see how they come out of that. They've got other assets, Tennis Australia, but we need a few weeks to totally get a read on what this Australian Open has certainly cost from a Tennis Australia point of view. Jeff is in East Hawthorne. Jeff, great to have you on board.
Yeah, Brett, two things. Obviously, very, very pleased to see the Australian Open go ahead. I agree with the caller before about the young children out there. My son has just completed his fourth and final year of Ball Kids. It culminated with him doing Novak Djokovic for the first time ever on court.
Fantastic.
So he was absolutely thrilled. Yeah. But just the one farcical situation that I saw unfold at the end with the ceremonies, that the Ball Kids wanted to take their masks off to have a photo with Novak, and I don't know if anyone saw on the television that they were told by the powers to be that they weren't able to do that, but everyone on the stage dais, including the Ball Kid giving the trophy, could have their masks off. So it's just that on and off again thing with the state government, I think, and that's probably why there's been a bit of mixed sentiment out there with this, the whole mask thing. But I thought that was just a shame to the Ball Kids, because they were really looking forward to that photo.
No, I understand that totally. I mean, I was out there doing the doubles presentation for the men's earlier when all the kids came over with Ivan Dodig and Filip Plošek, which was a great win in the men's doubles. I think one young kid actually walked over without his mask on and got reprimanded, and I don't think was able to get in the photo. So yeah, a little bit inconsistent at times of who's wearing a mask and who isn't. I mean, I had to make a stack of announcements right across the finals weekend with my on-court duties, telling people they had to put a mask on all the time, even though the roof is open. And anyway, I mean, it's I think it worked pretty well. I think most people who came to the tennis, the vast majority, just accepted the COVID situation, that things were different, just easier to abide rather than protest. Although, obviously, there was a few, probably, if I can put it nicely, a few loose cannons that got in the crowd last night. But, you know, you buy your ticket, you can come along, you can barrack in whatever manner you like, and if you barrack outside the what's accepted, well, then you get quickly whisked out, as a few did last night. Wally from Blackburn South, it's pronounced Tiley. Absolutely, yes. I don't know why he's called Craig Tilley by anyone, but it is Craig Tiley. Thank you, Wally, for pronouncing that. The Australian Open was not a COVID success because it brought in several cases of the new COVID strain when we were COVID-free before they arrived. But what we've got to mention here is that everything was contained. None of it drifted out into the community. I don't want to get into all this stuff over the next hour, but I think in the wash-up, the Australian Open, along with Quarantine Victoria, along with the government, contained all of this. I mean, Paula Bardoza was the one player that tested positive. She was put into a special additional hotel, the Holiday Inn, and she had to serve a longer period before she came out. The other officials who tested positive had to have an extended stay, and obviously anyone that was impacted on those flights had the extra lockdown period. So got out into the community, and it was community transmission. Absolutely, everyone could be up in arms. So for me, it's absolutely been a COVID success. So BP, what's the future for Lions people going forward into the 2021 men's and women's and combined tournaments? An interesting question. And I'm not trying to do Lions people out of a job, but I'm telling you right now, there's been an overwhelming support for the electronic line calling. It's a cleaner court. The players, yes, certainly, you know, getting towards the business end of the tournament, we're not happy with some of the calls, and they could request certainly a replay, but it's foolproof technology. It's 100%. They can't argue it, and which is, you know, probably takes away a little bit of the theatre, but I think if we want, you know, and have technology, then, you know, it's got to work, and it's 18 months it was tested, this technology. So it's absolutely foolproof. I don't know why you'd actually would want to be a Lions person, to be totally honest. It is the hardest job. I've sat behind Lions people. You need an eagle eye. I mean, Wimbledon will be the interesting one, and Roland Garros with the clay, you know, still having the chair umpire come down, looking at the mark when they haven't even brought in Hawkeye, certainly for their French Open. So I think it's going to be a little bit different right around the world, but eventually it's got pretty much the players' support for it to continue to roll along. 1-300-736-736. You can get your calls in tonight, or 0433-98-1116 on the text. Hume Tennis and Community Centre is one of Australia's premier tournament and training venues, just 15 minutes from Melbourne Airport, 16 ITF-sized courts and accommodation available. It is a mini Melbourne Park. It's an outstanding setup. It's ideal for the travelling coaching groups and families. Check out humetennis.com.au. Might have a quick listen to Craig Tiley, the CEO of Tennis Australia, the Australian Open Tournament Director, who had this to say earlier today in the wash-up of a big 2 weeks, really, a big 9 months for Tennis Australia.
Craig, how was the wash-up from last night? Was it quieter than previous ones?
Yep, it was a COVID quiet. It was, you know, we normally have a good time afterwards. We get all the teams together and including the players, but we didn't do anything last night. It was a very quiet early morning departure from the facility, and it was the right thing to do. I think there will come a time when everyone can celebrate. I think the celebration this time will come in people's minds and their feeling of success that they had.
Craig, I know you've spoken a lot about the financial benefits of this tournament, but just financially from Tennis Australia, I mean, how big a hole has the sort of the last month put in Tennis Australia's finances?
Well, we had, you know, a number of different plans in place and scenarios, and you know, there was certainly many variables that happened. The lockdown for 5 days, not having fans, not being able to sell premium experiences or ticketing. We'll exhaust our reserves. We had $80 million of cash in the reserve. We'll exhaust those, and on top of that, we've taken a loan, which we will use. So it's going to be a significant financial strain on the organisation. But the positive about it is it's put us in a position of momentum where we've got other assets which we've invested in the past around the world. But we'll be in a healthy position. Everyone's able to keep their jobs. And through how we've managed our finances through the pandemic, that's one of the things we've been incredibly proud of. And we'll get through the next cycle as well. Obviously, we're planning on other events and more events leading in, as well as our major source of revenue. But we're in a good place. But we've had to spend all the spare money we had to be in this place.
I know it's a long way away, but next year, I mean, could you do it all again next year? Or is that just a bridge too far financially?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We started planning it a week ago. We normally are well far in advance on a year ahead, but this time we'd be a shorter time period because we're in February. But we are. 2022 is going to be a magnificent year. Obviously, if we're still in the version of the pandemic and we have to do certain programs and procedures like we have, we'll be well prepared for those because we've done it once. I don't think there's any variable now that we won't be able to handle because we had every single one thrown at us. I think anything you can list that could happen in an event, we had these last 2 weeks. So So I think the team is well practiced. I'm hoping that we're in a different environment, closer to what we normally used to in 2022, but our partners, the Victorian government, as well as our ticket holders, many will come back. We had a long wait list of people that wanted to get in last night. We had our maximum allowed last night, 7,500 people, and that was the maximum that was allowed at 50%.
Can you imagine vaccines being a mandatory requirement for players next year?
It's a hard question to answer that, because I believe those that are travelling internationally will be in a position where it's mandatory, because the airlines themselves will probably likely mandate that, just like they do other forms of protocols. So, with the Olympic Games coming up, what the athletes are going to do around that, I think is important. I do think that from everything we're hearing, the vaccinations will be something that will help everyone.
Craig, there was some booing last night when you mentioned the vaccine. So what did you think they were booing about, and were you disappointed with that?
Well, I was on the court, so I heard the magnificent noise that 7,500 people were making. Actually, it's different if you're sitting in the stands, if you're on the court. So it was really hard to hear. But people expressed themselves. But for us, the most important thing is that there was actually a very energetic crowd. We hadn't seen that. We haven't seen that all year. This was the first time since the pandemic began that there was an organization that put together a sport and entertainment event that had crowds, had the top players in the world, ended up with two great champions, Naomi Osaka on Saturday and Novak last night, two greats of the game, had every top player, bar a few that couldn't make it for other reasons, and were here for 5 weeks, which will end up being 6 weeks. So that's more what we were celebrating. Crowds can express themselves. But it was a very energetic crowd, which we particularly enjoyed. We were more worried about not having energy on the court, but it was fantastic.
Is this the blueprint, do you think, for a major sporting event and moving forward now?
I think it's a good question. I believe it is a blueprint. It's not. Everyone has a different way of approaching it. If you want to ensure that every athlete is not either has the virus or is not incubating the virus, you need to have a period of time before where you test consistently and they're isolated for enough period of time where they don't go beyond the incubation period of 10 to 14 days. When you do that, and then you stick the athletes out to compete, everyone will have the opportunity to compete and they won't be taken out because they either are close contact or they contract the virus. So I think that's essential to protect the athletes' health and safety. And that's why in the Olympic Games case, we've been challenging the Olympic Games to ensure that for our athletes, we're concerned about our athletes, our tennis players as well, is that are they going to be put in an environment where they can be ensured that they can play? Now they can get on the court, they're not going to be a close contact or not going to be able to not contract the virus. So I think that's really important. I think it's a blueprint that works. It requires more resources and more time, but if you want to do it right, that's the commitment you have to make, and that's one that we made.
So that is Craig Tiley speaking on a nice blustery Brighton Beach earlier today, down with Novak in the Sir Norman Brooks Challenge Cup. If you want to weigh in on that, 0433 98 11 16, or you can give us a call, 1300 736 736. Before we go to the break from Swanee, I miss the centre lines person ducking when a 200-kilometre serve gets punched down the centre. That moment they think, oh dear. My point there, Swanee, why would you want to be a lines person when you got the big guys serving at 200 kilometres plus? We'll take a break. The first serve is your home of tennis. We'll be back with more. Scott Spitz from The Age to give us his perspective on this year's Australian Open.
First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a quality Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists, providing landscape, horticultural and environmental services throughout Australia at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Great to be here, day after the Australian Open, all done and dusted for 2021. Brett Phillips in the chair tonight. Love your calls. 1300 736 736 on the text, 0433 98 11 16. Jeff, Simon, Frank, you've all called in tonight. We will. This is what we do at the First Serve. We'll get in touch with you personally. Prizes coming your way, so we'll give you a call probably at some stage tomorrow and deliver those right to your front door. Scott Spitz has done a beautiful job with The Age, one of our major newspapers in this town, covering the Australian Open, like all of us, starting early, working late the last fortnight. Scott, it's great to have you on the day after. Have you had a chance just to wind down a little bit today?
Yeah, g'day, VP. My head is certainly spinning. I think that normally happens after any Australian Open, but after this one in particular, yeah, it's been been a slog, but thoroughly enjoyable as always. And yeah, so many great storylines. And obviously the story behind the Open was the threat and living in the COVID world. So yeah, just a really fascinating 2 weeks, a couple of weeks in fact.
No doubt. I mean, Scotty, just all sorts of hurdles continually thrown at Tennis Australia, having to deal with those and try and get to the finish line yesterday. I mean, it's quite a remarkable effort, really.
It's an amazing effort. It's stunning. Full credit to everyone involved. So much planning and preparation. The tournament was delayed for 3 weeks. There was conjecture beforehand that it might have to be cancelled.
Yep.
Really protracted and intricate negotiations with health authorities to get the right conditions done, and then obviously the agreement of the player bodies for that to happen. And yeah, it started on time. There was even the fact that it survived a 5-day lockdown in Victoria, and crucially there that under the conditions of the lockdown, professional sport was able to go ahead. So, you know, just imagine had it been worse and had the tournament been forced to stop for that time, that would have been disastrous.
No doubt. Scotty, I mean, we walked different corridors. We're in different parts of the precinct, so I'm in sort of a cocoon for 2 weeks when I'm at the Australian Open, and you'd be hearing things, seeing things. You're obviously in a lot of the player press conferences. So what are the things that stand out for you across the fortnight? You know, story-wise, the things that, I suppose, made the biggest impression on you?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's what the sport is all about, you know, catering for the fans and their chance to go watching tennis. So to have seen that drastic time on the Friday night when the crowds are actually asked to leave the stadium, and then for the next 5 days to have no fans on site at all, you know, for the busiest weekend, was just remarkable. So I was really pleased to see when the fans came back. And in terms of, you know, speaking to the players, they were consistently asked about, you know, what it was like to play in front of crowds, and then what it's like to play without crowds, what they'd gone through with quarantine, how they'd survived hard quarantine. So many different stories there. Jennifer Brady was the exception. She was the player who defied the odds and then went through hard quarantine and then went all the way to the final. That was a massive achievement. Storylines everywhere. A memorable Australian Open with the run of Aslan Karatsev was remarkable. To win qualifying matches and then go all the way to the semi-final, I love those stories. So
it's a life changer, Scotty, isn't it? I mean, in all the majors, all the big sort of Masters 1000 events, the hip pocket looks healthier. It's an absolute life changer. It should be inspiration to any tennis player. If you're sitting between 100, 200, 200, 300, that, I mean, there's a lot of players, they can play the game extremely well. If you can get that consistency and peak at the right time and have one breakthrough, it can just, you know, set yourself up for forever.
It's a life-changing moment, no doubt. And look, the financial reward shouldn't be forgotten. I mean, that's just massive, and that will set him up for life and for the rest of his career, no doubt. I like him a bit. I'd never heard of him. He was, ranked around the 110, 120 mark for the tournament, so not impossible to do what he did. But again, to win the qualifying matches that weren't even in Australia, I mean, maybe that helped him in his case to have that break between the qualifying and the start of the tournament. And then all of a sudden you look up and, you know, there's this guy in the fourth round you haven't heard of, and next thing you know, he's off through the semi-finals. Yeah, just a stunning, stunning effort, really.
Yeah, we love that. Scott Spitz from The Age with us. Thanks to the KDV Tennis Academy. Live, train and study on the Gold Coast. Enrolments are now open at kdvsport.com, right opposite Metricon Stadium. A terrific tennis facility. When you sit in and you, Scott, listen to Novak Djokovic and you see him up close, and so much spoken and written about Novak and who he actually is as a person, and we see the public face, we don't see, you know, the private behind the scenes. And I think, you know, Novak alluded to last night that, you know, there's going to be a documentary come out later this year which will go behind the scenes and maybe give a different perspective on Djokovic. But what's the Novak that you see?
Well, he's interesting, BP. He has changed over time. I think the really thing that I noticed last night after his win was his real humility. And you know, this is a guy who in his early years, he would have partied hard after a win, and he knew that wasn't even possible this year, and he was happy that he's very philosophical about his role in the sport and his status in the big three. And the other interesting thing last night, he spoke about the difficulties that players will continue to face with travel this year. And you know, there's going to be a lot of events without crowds this year, most of them, in fact. And he reflected really strongly about how he's going to spend a lot of time away from his family and his young kids. And it was a good insight into him. You know, he's the world number one. He can he's won so many things, and they do mean a lot to him. And he's just this incredible player who just steps up when it really counts. You know, it's the phenomenal achievement, really.
It is. I mean, it was brutal last night, and where we sit in the bunker, and you know, we called it last night. It was great to have Jared and Rob Koenig with me. And when you're at that court level, and you watch how he just patrols that baseline, and he slides on the hard courts, and to penetrate past that is all. Well, certainly on Rod Laver, Arena Scott, is mission impossible.
Incredible. Look, I watch a lot of Daniel Medvedev in the lead up to it, and I spoke to him a few days ago, and this is a guy after his semi-final, he was oozing confidence, and I genuinely thought this could be the moment, this could be the time that Djokovic gets beaten. And then he comes out on court, and you just see he goes to a whole new level. And I think one person described it, that he forces opponents to aim for a very small spot when they're going to go for a winner. Mm. He moves incredibly well. He stays in points. He returns serve. Because he stays in points, he just, you know, the mathematics there means he puts himself in a position to win. It's, you know, he's the king of the hard courts, and you know, his record isn't as strong in New York, and it's really quirky that he's just had this level of dominance, you know, in Melbourne. He's obviously won in 2008, but for the last 10 years,
yep.
I think he's lost 3 matches.
Yep.
Just phenomenal.
No doubt, he's certainly going to break all the records, and look forward to having some more tennis amongst other sports that you do for the age right throughout the year.
Definitely. Thanks, BP. And probably, just remember, worth probably only 11 months to the next Open in Australia.
Yes, that's right. We get a breather. Scott Spitz from The Age covering this year's Australian Open. A quick break and we'll come back. Shelby Rogers hopefully going to join us over in Adelaide, because the girls have shifted over there for a big WTA tournament. Scotty, thanks to the KDV Tennis Academy. Live, train and study on the Gold Coast. Enrolments are now open at kdvsport.com.
First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a quality Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis, at sunblesssunscreens.com.au. And GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists, at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Right in Open 2021, and we can talk any broader tennis issues, 1300 736 736, or on the text 0433 98 1116. If you're thinking of buying, selling or leasing in Melbourne, get in contact with the Collings team. They're great supporters of ours here on the First Serve. Their number is 9486 2000, or visit their website, collings.com.au. Harry Manor is doing a beautiful job, although he's a Tsitsipas fan. He got into the Tsitsipas box v. Medvedev on Friday night, and be fair to say, he wasn't a happy camper. It was a demolition job by Daniel Medvedev, who moves to 3 in the ATP rankings. So Dominic Thiem slips to 4, Shapovalov to 11, Monfils to 12, Grigor Dimitrov went up 4 spots to 17. But as I mentioned there with Scott Spitz, the big riser, the big story, was Aslan Karatsev going up 72 places to 42 in the world. So Naomi Osaka, Jennifer Brady with her magnificent run of the final, up 11 spots to world number 13. Karolina Mukova, who made the semis, up 5 to 22. Jessica Pegula had a great Australian Open, up 18 spots to 43. Shea Suwaga, watch her every day of the week, up 21 spots to 50. And Daria Kasatkina, we need to mention her as well, won the WTA event that was running in the second week of the Australian Open, up 18 spots to 57. She was so close to the top 10 a few years ago. Now, a lot of the female players have headed to Adelaide, the Adelaide International being played this week. We know Ash Barty was a late entrant as a wild card on Friday, and well, she played our next guest at the Australian Open, who's had a terrific win today. I speak of the American Shelby Rogers. Shelby, it's great to have you on our little humble tennis show here in Melbourne.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Nice to get a win today over Kudermetova in 6-3, 7-6. This must feel like a whirlwind sort of 5 or 6 weeks, quarantining in Melbourne, Australian Open. Now you're in Adelaide. What's it been like for you personally, Shelby?
Yeah, it's definitely been a long trip, but it's been a nice treat. I mean, we've got to have fans in the stands and play some really good tennis, and fortunately I've been able to win a lot of matches and kept it going today against a really good player.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, obviously the WTA seem to have done a terrific job, Shelby, to provide the players with so many playing opportunities through this early part of the year where it's been tough to plan a calendar.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice for us because Australia's so far, so we travel all this way. It's nice to have a bunch of tournaments in a row. You know, we try to to stay as long as we can and enjoy the beautiful cities. It's my first time in Adelaide, so I'm very excited to be here. And, yeah, I want to stay as long as I can.
What's it like, just in general, you know, being on tour at the moment? I mean, you've been a professional for a long time inside the top 100. You've, you know, made quarterfinals of a major. I mean, where are you at in your own sort of journey right now? And also you throw a pandemic on top of that, which has been such a big adjustment for all professional tennis players.
Absolutely. It's been a challenge for everyone and a lot of changes along the way. We just kind of, you know, learn to go with the flow now and expect the unexpected. But I think we're all grateful to have a job and to be able to compete. And for me, I had knee surgery a couple years ago, so I was off tour for a while. So it's just, it's such a blessing to be back, and I'm really enjoying my time on court. And when you gain that perspective, you're able to just enjoy it a little more.
How far can you sort of plan ahead at the moment?
Not at all. Honestly, it's pretty much day by day. I mean, we can plan tournaments, but things change every week. So it's been a challenge for me to, you know, let go of some of my routines and, you know, controlling all the plans and things like this and just take it each day as it comes, you know, adjust to whatever's happening. And like I said, be thankful for the opportunities we do have. But yes, it's been very difficult to plan and a lot of changes along the way.
Such a healthy representation of American women inside the top 100. I imagine you must be rapt for, you know, a Jennifer Brady who makes the final. Jessica Pegula had a breakout tournament as two players that really made an impression at this year's Australian Open.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so great to be a part of, you know, all these great American players coming up. I mean, I made the quarters of U.S. Open last year, so it's nice to see, you know, my other friends doing well, and we kind of push each other and we're having fun doing it. So hopefully it continues.
The margins are very small. I tell people all the time, I mean, you know, people might say, well, this result's an upset, but the margins are pretty small between, you know, Ash currently is world number one and players who are ranked, you know, outside the top 50. That, you know, your scalp can be certainly taken. I suppose it comes down to that consistency and continuity and players staying, you know, healthy, which is a big part of being a professional tennis player.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this time in women's tennis is probably the strongest it's ever been. I mean, you have players just outside the top 100 that could still beat anyone any day, you know? So no match is easy. Even in the slams, the first rounds you see are super tough, and there's a bunch of upsets on paper really early. So it's really exciting. And I mean, it's a challenge. It's tough. And every day you just give all you can, leave it all on the court. But yeah, everyone is really, really good right now.
Shelby Rogers, American tennis player, joining us in Adelaide. She's had a great win today. Joe Konta coming up, Shelby, for you next. Just give us a bit of a feel of, you know, your team, because, you know, travelling around the world, we see players with, you know, sort of bigger entourages, smaller entourages, but they're such an important part of, you know, the day-to-day ins and outs of travelling as a player.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you saw a lot of players cut down on their entourages just because of, you know, the pandemic. Some people aren't comfortable traveling yet and, you know, with the quarantine, things like this. So I just traveled here with my coach, just me and him. We actually just started working together a few months ago. So it's been an interesting journey. We've gotten to know a lot about each other and, you know, figure out some things. But it's been a lot of fun, and hopefully we can continue that. But, yeah, I think the entourage is super important, especially because it's an individual sport. It can get a little bit lonely, but you need someone that can stay positive and encourage you and, you know, keep good energy throughout the year.
Yeah, the dynamic of player and coach is fascinating as tennis fans to watch. I mean, there's obviously been some long-standing sort of coach-player relationships in tennis on both sides, and then there are those players will have a lot of coaches across their career for varying reasons, I suppose. You know, you don't maybe quite see eye to eye, or you're going on different journeys. How difficult is that to get that right synergy with a coach and that, you know, the going to work aspect, and then obviously there's the sort of off-court aspect as well?
Yeah, it's absolutely very difficult because you have to get somebody that you mesh with. They might be a great coach, but you just don't get along with them, or, you know, everybody's a little bit different and people find different things at work. So you're together a lot, you know, on the road many weeks per year. So I'm kind of the player that likes to have a coach for a long time. Some players like to switch and get different opinions quite often. But yeah, it's a very, you know, personal decision and a unique one for each player. So there's no right or wrong answer. And that's kind of the beauty of it, too.
A couple of quick ones. Do you like the electronic line calling, Shelby? You a fan?
Yes. Please bring it back. I really did enjoy it in Melbourne. I think, you know, you step on the court, and you agree to this machine. There's no controversy. There's no questioning it. It's just that's what stands. So I thought it was a really cool innovation, and I would like to see it more for sure.
Let's. Are you a fan of Let's? Would you ban Let's, or do you think, you know, obviously, historically, they've been part of tennis forever?
On the serve, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it's a part of it. I mean, it's fine. It doesn't happen as much as you think, and, you know, it doesn't really change the course of a match, I don't think. But we have World Team Tennis where we do play Let's, so that's kind of interesting. But I'm fine with it as is right now.
And one last one, towels. I don't think we'll ever go back to a time when, you know, particularly in the COVID times, when ball kids are going to be bringing players towels. Was that an adjustment that was pretty easy, you know, just to go and sort of, you know, get your towel, do what you got to do and get back up to the service line? Because players are so used to having sort of ball kids run out towels.
Sure, yeah. That was an easy adjustment for me, and I think it's one that will stick around, like you said. But as a former ball girl myself, as a child, I actually really enjoyed taking the towels to players because you felt, you know, so close to them and like you were really a part of their match. But, yeah, I think it's fine now, players handling all of that on their own.
I really appreciate some insights. Good luck in Adelaide, Joe Conder, and hopefully you can have a nice deep run this week. And good luck for the year ahead, however you sort of navigate your way through and wherever the tour does take you. And really appreciate the chat.
Yeah. Thank you so much, and I hope to see all of you guys out there for the night match. I think I am tomorrow, so that'll
indeed
be fun.
We are going to Adelaide broadcasting tonight. Shelby Rogers, American, who did play, of course, Ash Barty at the Australian Open. Has made a couple of quarters, one at the French Open and, as Shelby mentioned, at the US Open last year. Of course, thanks to Melbourne's leading synthetic grass court surface and construction specialist. That is ASTI Tennis Courts. They're trusted by Melbourne tennis clubs and councils. Check out aste.com.au. A break. We'll come back with our last seg here on the First Serve.
First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a quality Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists, providing landscape, horticultural and environmental services throughout Australia at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Indeed it is. Post Australian Open edition tonight. Brett Phillips with you. We'll be into our sort of 8 o'clock regular slot right through 2021 as of next week. But if you are listening via, of course, SEN SA, Adelaide International, we spoke to Shelby Rogers. Ash Barty's going to be in town. She's got the bye in the first round. So her, of course, second round match to be determined. It's a pretty good field, to be honest. Barty, Bencic, Konta, Mertens, Swiatek, Martic, Putintseva. No mice over in Julius Hotel, and I think over there in Adelaide. So there is a very good feel for the Adelaide International. In fact, there's tournaments going on right across the globe. The tennis tour does move pretty quickly. So the Singapore Open being played this week. There's a fair bit of Australian representation. James Duckworth, JP Smith, who's got in as a qualifier. Mark Polmans, Alexei Poprin, who I need to answer a message on our socials. I did promise that. Also Matt Ebden and John Millman will be in the field. We might give a little take on the Australians' First Serve Twitter. From EJ here. I've been following Poprin for a while now, Brett. I think he has the game to have a really, really good career. Right now, though, he seems to be struggling to make that next step. Do you think he can break in to that top 100, top 50? And if so, when? Would love your opinion. Well, he's a great talent. There's no doubt. He's got good people around him. And doing a lot at the Mouratoglou Academy, like Tsitsipas. So I know that Patrick Mouratoglou, who was sitting in Stefanos's coaching box when he's not in Serena's coaching box, and he'll sit in Alexei's coaching box as well. So obviously there's some good grounding there, and a few of his staff underneath, I suppose, have taken Alexei under their wing. He's well managed. He didn't really get going at all last year. Obviously elected not to go to the US Open, and he stayed in Europe and then played some challenges later in the year. Couldn't quite hit his straps. Had a win or two in the lead-up to the Australian Open, then had that great five-set win over Goffin. Look, he's got easy power. He's got a big serve, but you've just got to keep adding layers and dimensions. It's hard to project totally where he is going to land at the moment because, you know, a lot of players play of a similar nature. So how does he have a little point of difference that can maybe just elevate him up the order? I mean, right now we've got Demonor at 23. Now, if you want my honest opinion here, I mean, I think that's not the total ceiling for Alex. I think he can go higher, but the ones ahead of him are going to make it damn tough. So he's got to bide his time. We might be another 4 or 5 years away from Alex De Minaur hitting his straps. So Millman at 39. So that's about where John's at. You know, if he could get into the top 20, the top 30, I think that'd be a great achievement. He's capable. I mean, Kyrgios at 48. Just going to depend how much tennis Nick wants to play this year. Jordan Thompson at 50. You know, he's going to have to add some weapons to what is a pretty sound game fundamentally if he's going to go any higher. Duckworth at 100, you know, hopefully stays injury-free because he should be around that sort of 60-70 mark. Popperin at 114, O'Connell and Polmans, they're the three who could certainly elevate themselves inside the top 100. And they've got to start winning sort of a few of these 250 events at that lower end. So we could be sitting here in a year's time with all those guys with a similar ranking. I can't quite project forward how they're going to make the inroads at this stage, in my personal opinion. Yarra Tennis Coaching is Melbourne's independent tennis coaching program. It's at Eaglemont Tennis Club. It's run by Shane Scrutton. He's a beauty. Programs for every age and standard. Contact Shane 0414 373 586 or check out yarratennis.com.au. So the Singapore Open on this week. Cordoba over in Argentina, the 250 on the clay. Diego Schwartzman is the top seed there. Benoit Paire is the number two seed. Hopefully he will get through the week without any major dramas, but that's not Benoit's sort of style. And, of course, in Montpellier in France, Roberto Bautista Agut is the top seed there. David Goffin is the number two seed. And Andy Murray is playing in that event. And Joe Wilfred Tsonga, who we didn't actually see out here in Australia for the Australian Open. So hopefully a bit of life left in Joe Willie. Available now, the sixth generation Yonex V-Core rackets, a toolbox of spin shots, waiting to be unlocked, available at Yonex dealers right around Australia. And, of course, do all your tennis shopping at Tennis Direct, Australia's favourite online tennis store. They've got fast delivery, great prices, free delivery on orders over $150. Just visit tennisdirect.com.au and use that promo code FIRSTSERVE10. I'm going to take a little breather for the next few days, but the tennis doesn't stop. Keep an eye on our website, thefirstserve.com.au. Follow us on our socials. We'll do it all again next Monday night. Have a great night, everyone, and hit them well.